Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock with Barth Calderon. Welcome to Wealth Protector TV. You may be listening on Wealth Protector Radio. Really excited to have my colleague here with us, Christine Allen. Christine, can you hear me okay?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
I can. And Christine is an attorney and a certified specialist. I want to make sure I get this right, in estate planning, trust, and probate law. And Christine, you gave a talk within the firm last week on the standards for mental capacity when it comes to estate planning. And I just thought it would be an awesome topic to get out to our wider audience. And so thanks for coming on. And what I hope you can start with is a quick description of what is an estate plan, and then moving into these issues of the mental capacity.
Absolutely. So when I draft an estate plan for someone, there are some very standard components, although we do customize each document particular to an individual's wishes. The first thing that we generally do is a trust, and a trust is necessary to avoid a probate in California if you have assets of over $166,000, excluding things like property held in joint tenancy or pay on death accounts or joint accounts. So almost invariably, everybody in California needs to have a trust set up.
Yeah, you don't have to be a multimillionaire.
No. And you do want to do that because a probate, well, I handle probates for people as well. It tends to be significantly more expensive, and it takes quite a bit of time to be completed. So your heirs later are waiting for potentially a year or longer to receive their share of your estate after you would pass away. So a trust is incredibly important if you don't want to have to go through that kind of, if you don't want your heirs to have to go through that kind of time and expense later. So in addition to a trust, we typically do a pour over will, which will indicate that any assets that we missed funding into your trust would go into your trust per your wishes to be distributed in accordance with your instructions in the trust. We also typically include powers of attorney for both healthcare and for finances. It's incredibly important that if you are still living but become incapacitated, that you have a trusted individual available to make healthcare decisions and financial decisions on your behalf. And a lot of people, when they do their planning, they think about when I pass away, what's going to happen to my assets. But the sometimes missing piece of the puzzle is, well, what happens if you're still living, but you're not capable of acting on your own behalf? So powers of attorney, both to cover financial transactions, any necessary litigation, those kind of things, and also healthcare decisions, where we even actually lay out what your preferences are for, care if you're incapacitated. Most people don't want to be in pain, for instance. So we want to make sure we include that they receive necessary pain medication.
Right. It's probably not a topic that a lot of people like to talk about, right? So,
it's difficult to go through the necessary questions on that, but it is so helpful for your loved one if you're in the situation where you are incapacitated, to know what your preferences would be, whether you want to be resuscitated, whether you want to stay on life support if you're in a coma, even things like if you do pass away, whether you want to be buried or cremated. And these take decisions off of the plate of somebody who is already in a difficult space, having to care for a loved one potentially, or make decisions for them. To know exactly what you want to happen. And then they're required to follow those directions as well. So those are most of the standard documents we include.
Yep. And then the mental capacity issues. I mean, is this a topic that is mostly focused on children dealing with their elderly parents, or where does this issue come into play, and what do we need to know about this?
For me, as a planner and as a litigator, you know, I deal with it in the litigation arena, typically after someone has passed away. You may have a disinherited relative, a child or somebody else who expected to inherit, come on in and claim that the individual who created the will or trust didn't know what they were doing, that they lacked the capacity to understand what was going on. That's typically where we find these things being handled in that regard. Also, you know, there are situations where we have an individual who's, you know, they may know the basics about their life, but maybe they have some memory issues. And then the question becomes, you know, on the planning side, whether or not that person has the requisite mental capacity to understand what's necessary legally to create a will or a trust. And that's incredibly important so that, you know, we aren't, number one, doing something for someone who might be subject to undue influence by a loved one who maybe wants to bring them in the office and, you know, take advantage. I'm very protective, obviously, of the clients in that situation. And then secondarily, to make sure that we're protecting from later attack the estate plans that we're putting in place for people. So I'll give you just the very basics of what the standards are in California. Yeah. The standard to create a will is very, very low standard. It's called testamentary capacity standard. What you need to understand in order to be able to do that is who your natural relations are. So who would be set to inherit in the event that you passed away without a will. Typically, this is talking about your children. Sometimes it could be your siblings, your parents. If you don't know who your own children are, you do not have the testamentary capacity necessary to create a will. The other two things you need to know are generally what your assets are. You don't need to know down to the dollar what's in your bank account. But if you own three properties, for example, you probably should be able to tell me, you know, I have three homes and they're in these three cities, for example. Right. You know, the other thing is just to understand the nature of what you're doing. So if you can't understand that your will says, I leave X house to Alan and Y land to Karen, for example, and you don't understand the consequence of what that means, then you also would not have the necessary standard.
But who's making that determination? Let's say I'm dealing with my parents, then there's different kids and the kids aren't on the same page. Who's deciding on whether somebody has the mental capacity if it's challenged?
If it's challenged, it's going to be a judge deciding, and it's probably not going to happen until after that person passes away. It's possible it could happen sooner. There are some cases allowing things to go forward where somebody has later become incapacitated, for example, and a child finds out that maybe a sibling took dad to a lawyer and maybe somebody wasn't really asking all the right questions and the lawyer just drafted up everything, leaving it to the one brother. So typically it's going to be a judge making that decision. And if you end up in a litigated case about it, there's going to be testimony presented on both sides. And if the person is still living, which would be unusual, you know, they may want a mental evaluation. So, you know, as a planner, if there's some question, sometimes what we'll request is that the client go get a letter from a doctor indicating that they do have the requisite capacity to understand the three things we just talked about.
Got it.
I will say it is a low standard. The courts have held that old age, feebleness, forgetfulness, filthy personal habits, personal eccentricities, failure to recognize old friends or relatives, physical disability, absent-mindedness, and mental confusion do not furnish grounds to hold that somebody creating a will lacked the necessary testamentary capacity. So you could have all of those things going on and a court could still find, no, they understood who their family members were. They know what property they had. And they clearly wanted to leave these items the way that they specified. So create a will, super low standard. And
super low.
You shouldn't be put off from doing it if you have maybe some, you know, early memory issues, for example.
Yeah. So it sounds like even if you want to forget your in-law relatives on purpose, you're still okay.
You're okay. That's exactly right. You're fine. And you should get a, you should at least have a will in place. Everyone should. I will say that the standard to create a trust is a little bit more complicated because it's looked at from a contractual capacity standard by the courts. So, you know, on top of what we just talked about, they also want you to be able to communicate regarding what it is that you're doing and to understand and appreciate the nature of what you're signing, the consequences of what you're signing, how it's going to impact other people, and if there are any alternatives or risks associated with it. And then the court will evaluate as part of any sort of, if there was litigation later as to whether the person had the capacity to create a trust, they will look at certain factors like level of attention and arousal and awareness. They may even look into the person's mental health history. But I will tell you that having even a mental condition does not rule out someone's, you know, ability to create a trust. If they had delusions, though, that were objectively unreasonable, the court might say, like, if you think that one of your children is a space alien, and so you disinherited them on that grounds, the court may find that you didn't have the requisite mental capacity to do that because children are not space aliens. generally, yeah. At least as far as I know, right?
So right. You and I were talking about kids offline, so we our kids could be other things, you know.
Sure.
But so a question I had then is, if your parent, let's say you're, you know, a lot of us are helping our elderly parents. If your parents are diagnosed with a cognitive disorder, is it too late to do estate planning for them?
Not necessarily.
It's not
necessarily. So it really depends on the degree of decline. And typically something like dementia is very progressive. So it may start out very mild. And I have had clients speak to me where they very clearly were like, they knew exactly what their assets were. They knew exactly who their children were, and they knew exactly what they wanted to do with them. That's all that's really required when we're talking about a will. And a trust is really not, it's not too far removed the capacity necessary there, since we just talked about that as well. And so, you know, I have had circumstances though, where then later they want you to repeat things back because maybe it's they're trying to recall exactly what it is that you said, and maybe they're starting to have those issues. So the reality is it's best to speak to a planning attorney who's experienced in the area, who will make sure that you are protected if you put together a plan or that your parent is. I am very cautious when a child wants to bring in a parent to do something like prepare an estate plan, because we're always looking out for issues like undue influence or duress. I never want to put together a plan for someone that is really motivated by another individual's desires, for example. And really the court's goal is overall generally to uphold the intent of the individual who's doing the planning. So, you know, you could end up in a lot of litigated disputes about people's plans, but generally the court, if they can tell that this person, this is what they wanted to do, and you know, you have the absolute right to leave your assets to whomever you choose to. You don't have to leave them to your children if that's not what you want to do. And there are some things that we as attorneys do to try to, you know, assist in bolstering our planning to support whatever your wishes are in case someone does challenge it later.
So. Christine, great information. Fantastic. You and I could talk forever on this. I have a lot more questions. Maybe we'll have you back on. But thank you, everybody, for joining. And stay tuned in for more education like this. Christine, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Paul.